This is a When Walls Can Talk network podcast.
Hello, Robert. My name is Jeremy. I know you can hear me, even though I may be speaking to you across time and technology. I extend my hand to you, not in intrusion, but in reverence. I've come, following the whispered rules that guard your legacy, to ask, may I share your tale? In my telling, I assure you will find respect and a promise to tread lightly upon the ground that bears your name. To you, Robert, I vow to be courteous, to acknowledge your very real presence that, upon the testimony of thousands who have broken your rules over the years, exists beyond your glass sanctuary. And when the final word is spoken, when the last note of our shared story fades into silence, I will say goodbye, closing the chapter with this same respect with which it was opened. But before I do, I ask, Robert, may I narrate the chapters of your existence, ensuring your story serves as proof of the mysteries that bind us all. Thank you, Robert. With your blessing, I will begin. What is it about the things we cannot explain that calls to us? Whispers to our innermost fears and fascinations. Could an object, a collection of fabric and straw, hold within it the power to reach beyond the silence and touch us? Have you ever looked into the eyes of a doll and felt the unsettling gaze returned? Where does the boundary lie between a harmless toy and a vessel for the unexplained? Is it in the power we give it, the stories we weave around it, or is there something more tangible there? In Key West, there's a doll, Robert. Some say he's just that, a doll. But others, they'll tell you he's alive with a spirit that's not his own. Whispers of curses and misfortunes, of a child's plaything turned into an object of both curiosity and fear. What makes us hold our breath as we pass him by? Is it the chill of the unknown, or the reflection of our own inner demons that we see in his stitched smile? We laugh off superstition in the light, but in the dark, don't we all become believers? This isn't just Key West's story. It's not just Robert's story. It's about the stories we tell ourselves, about fear, about belief, about the thin line we walk between skepticism and the abyss of the untrodden world of the spirits. Step into the dim corners where the known world falls away. Let's peer into the glass case housing Robert and ask ourselves, are we seeking him? Or is he, in some way, seeking us? Welcome to When Walls Can Talk, the podcast. It's time to face the doll in the sailor suit and the stories he carries. Are you ready to question everything? Throughout the ages, man has repeated the same earnest saying, more of a question really, or perhaps even a plea. If these walls could talk. But what if they do, and always have? Perhaps their stories, memories, and messages are all around us, if only we would take the moment to listen. On this podcast, we reinvestigate legends and tales of the past and allow the echoes of their lessons to live on once again, informing us, educating us, and sharing new and unique insight into the inner workings of the paranormal and spiritual world. Will you dare to listen? This is When Walls Can Talk, the podcast. Where does a story like this truly begin, I suppose? I guess it starts in 1905, at a five-year-old's birthday party. One that would forever mark the beginning of a legend, and perhaps the destruction of thousands of lives. Amidst the laughter and the innocence of childhood, Robert Eugene Otto is about to receive a gift that will alter the fabric of his reality. Isn't it funny how we give gifts with love, without truly knowing the ripple effects they might cause on the surfaces of our loved ones' lives? For Gene's parents, their gift of an interesting-looking doll at their son's birthday was just that, a simple act of giving. Little did they know they were introducing a new and unsettling protagonist into their family's story. Gene, his sister Mitzvah, their nanny and her daughter, are gathered around the living room, the fabric of their day about to be weaved with threads of the extraordinary. "Time for lunch, children," calls a voice, reminder of the mundane against the magical. But Gene, he's not hungry. No, there's a new friend to be made, a bond to be formed. "Robert and I, we're not hungry," he declares. And in that moment, a simple statement becomes the prologue to a lifetime of whispers and wonders. "But you're Robert," came the incredulous reply. But no, the roles have shifted. Identities have been exchanged. Robert is now the doll, and the child is now, well, Gene is now Gene. Folklorists and legends provide us with cautionary tales about the power of names, of identity. It's said that to give an effigy your name, your clothes, is to give it part of your soul. A curious notion, isn't it? That a simple act of naming could weave a thread of life into inanimate objects. What must have gone through the minds of the Otto family, witnessing their son, now called Gene, bestow upon his new doll not just a name, but his very own? To them, it might have been a child's innocent play, a moment of make-believe, but the walls of the Otto home bore witness to something far more unsettling. Different and distinct voices would drift from Gene's room. "Who does Gene have over?" his parents would wonder, stepping into a room expecting to find a playmate, friend from down the lane. Instead, they found only Gene and Robert the doll. Imagine their perplexity, their unease, a room filled with the murmur of conversation, yet housing only a boy and his doll. How does one rationalize the irrational, explain the unexplainable? The question isn't just what the Otto family believed, but what we choose to believe. Is it possible that in naming Robert, Gene unlocked something ancient, something beyond the ken of ordinary understanding, a bond formed not just in play, but in the very fabric of existence? The idea of dolls as vessels for energies or spirits crosses cultures and eras, where dolls have always been more than mere playthings. They've served as conduits for traditions where dolls are repositories of belief, of hope, and sometimes of fear. From the voodoo dolls of Haiti to the protective Kachina dolls of the Hopi, each carries with it the distinct capacity for the breath of life, a spark of the spirit that created or cherished it. But why dolls? Is it their humanoid form, a mirror to our own that invites us to imbue them with our essence, our desires, and our fears? Or is it something deeper, an understanding that objects, when loved or when feared, can hold a power beyond the physical? In the case of Robert, could it be that Gene's innocent act of naming and sharing his life with the doll opened a door? A door that allowed Robert to become more than a collection of materials, but a vessel for something ancient, something alive. What can these cultural connections tell us about the relationships we form with the objects in our lives? Are they mere inanimate companions to our solitary moments? Or do they hold within them the echoes of our joys, our sorrows, our very souls? Today, Robert finds a home within the Fort East Martello Museum, behind a pane of glass that ominously separates him from the outside world around him. A silent, watchful form, observing the comings and goings of the world with unblinking eyes, bound not just by glass, but by a set of rules that govern our engagement with him. First, an introduction. One must say hello and acknowledge his presence as we did at the top of this episode, a nod to the unseen forces that may linger in his stitched seams. Second, Robert values courtesy and politeness, virtues not just of good manners, but of safe passage through his gaze. Be kind, they say. Everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about, and this holds true even, or especially, with Robert. And then, perhaps most importantly, the parting, as we will at the end. Goodbye, Robert. A closure. A sealing of the encounter, leaving no threads untied, no invitations unwittingly extended. But perhaps most pivotal is their respect for his physical image, his likeness. When taking photos, you must ask, for in capturing him, we catch more than just lights and shadows. We capture and bring with us his essence, and with Robert, permission is key. To disregard these rules is to invite chaos into one's life. Robert's curse, as it's come to be known, is no idle threat. Livelihoods shattered, dreams dissolved, and the very fabric of survivors' lives torn asunder. These are the tales of those who learned too late the power of respect, and of the unseen laws that govern our interactions with this mysterious effigy. Letters, thousands of them, are sent daily to Robert, pleading for mercy from all corners of the globe. From those struck by lightning to victims of floods, fires, and unexplained maladies, the stories are as varied as they are chilling. Each letter extends and displays the reach of Robert's influence and the depth of belief in the curse that bears his name. I saw an interview once with a woman who was involved in a fascinating project just a few years ago to capture the aura of the doll. Sounds straightforward, right? But we're not just talking about any doll. This is Robert the doll, a figure as much mystery as he is history. Now, everyone and everything has an aura, a kind of energy field that some claim can be photographed. So why not a doll's? To do so, one needs an SLS camera, a piece of technology designed to detect and map these energy fields. It's typically used to map humans, not dolls sitting silently on display. But when the team points it at Robert, something unexpected happens. It maps him. Yes, a doll. And that's the first sign that maybe, just maybe, we're veering into uncharted territory. As the moment is captured and the aura begins to form on the computer screen, the photographer, aware of the rules surrounding the doll, begins to tell Robert how handsome he is. But someone else on the team decides to crack a joke. "Yeah, for an ugly," he says, dismissing the gravity of what they're attempting. The air changes. The mood shifts. Now let's pause for a second. Did they really think they could waltz into this experiment, armed with a camera and a cavalier attitude, and not face any repercussions? The rules about Robert are well known. Be respectful. Introduce yourself. Always ask permission before taking his photo. Rules that were, let's be honest, thrown to the wind. What starts as an experiment spirals into a personal nightmare for the individual closest to the cursed doll, the photographer. Car accidents, financial ruin, a cascade of misfortune that begs the question, was it all just coincidence? Or was it Robert's doing? How often do we tread into territories we don't fully understand, dismissing the warnings as mere superstitions? The person behind this camera learned the hard way that some rules are in place for a reason. But where did Robert the Doll actually come from? Originally, before coming into contact with the Otto household, the roots of Robert's story stretch back to the workshops of the Steiff Company in Germany, renowned for their invention of the teddy bear in the early 20th century. Around 1904, amidst a climate ripe with innovation and a newfound affection for plush toys, Robert was crafted. Distinct in size and presumably designed to mirror the visage of an actual child, Robert was more than a toy. He was a masterpiece, intended to captivate and charm. It's speculated that Robert was initially intended as a display piece in a department store, being near lifelike in size, as a salesman for the Steiff Company's menagerie of plush creations. His unique attributes and the craftsmanship he embodied were designed to draw the eye, to showcase the pinnacle of what Steiff could offer. This theory suggests a doll made not merely for play, but as an ambassador of quality and creativity. The Otto family, possibly during a trip to Germany or through relatives, came across Robert. What drew them to him remains a part of the mystery. Was it his unique size, his almost lifelike appearance, or perhaps something unspoken, a sense of destiny or fate that guided their choice? Regardless, they chose to bring Robert back with them to Key West, where his legend would truly begin to unfold. In the Otto household, Robert would transition from a silent observer of the world to an active participant in a story that continues to captivate and mystify. Right after Robert the Doll crosses the threshold of the Otto home, a subtle but profound shift occurs. One that casts a shadow over the household's previously sunny demeanor. Little Robert, now drawn to this peculiar new addition, abandons his other toys, his world narrowing until it contains nothing but Robert. The doll becomes his universe, an obsession that whispers of unseen strings being pulled in the background. The atmosphere in the Otto household thickens with tension, a sense of unease creeping into the corners of the sunlit rooms. "Emmeline? Emmeline?" Miss Otto's voice breaks the silence, a note of confusion mingling with concern. The discovery of a shattered vase on the floor, the second such incident this week, sends ripples of disquiet through the family. Emmeline, the nanny, is quick to deny responsibility, her confusion mirroring Miss Otto's. In the midst of this perplexity enters Jean, clutching Robert. "Jean, honey, you scared us," his mother exclaims. Jean's denial of any wrongdoing, and his insistence that Robert did it, was a prelude to a terrifying realization that perhaps, in this house, not all is as it seems. Accusation hangs in the air, unlanding and unnerving Minnie Otto to her core.
She had welcomed the doll into their home, never anticipating the shadow it would cast over their lives. Her relationship with Robert, once marked by indifference, now curdles into suspicion and fear. Robert's silent gaze, once benign, now seems to hold a malevolent glint. Robert always notices, they say, a phrase that becomes a harbinger of the strange and inexplicable events that now haunt the Otto household. The tension surrounding Robert the doll reaches a fever pitch one seemingly ordinary night. Jean's mother, pushed to the brink of her patience by endless tales and excuses centered around Robert, confronts a reality she can no longer ignore. "It is hours past your bedtime," she begins, her voice a mixture of weariness and frustration, only to be met by Jean's implausible claim, "Robert can't sleep." The air thickens with a mix of disbelief and exasperation as she counters the absurdity of the situation. "I am so tired of hearing about Robert. He's just a doll. He doesn't get tired. He doesn't need sleep. He isn't real," she asserts, her words slicing through the dimly lit room, an attempt to sever the unnerving connection her son claims to share with this inanimate figure. Jean's anguished plea, "Mother, no, he's my best friend." It is this moment, this heart-wrenching declaration of companionship with the doll, that finally forces her hand. She declares that Robert will be locked away, a physical barrier erected to shield her family from the unseen influence that Robert seems to wield. "Now, until you can understand that Robert is just a doll, he's going to remain locked in there. You can't blame him for any more of your misdeeds," she states, her resolve firm yet laced with an undercurrent of doubt and fear. The directive for Jean to retire to his room served as her final attempt to restore order, to reclaim a semblance of normalcy. It's a moment of surrender, an acknowledgement that the presence of Robert the doll has evolved from a mere child's fancy into a source of genuine turmoil. The Fort East Martello Museum is today a magnet for attention, energy, and focus from thousands to tens of thousands of visitors from all corners of the earth. The museum, a custodian of Robert's legacy, begins to receive an unprecedented influx of correspondence. Letters, emails, and social media messages pour in from those who believe they felt the consequences of disrespecting Robert. Each letter is a confession, an apology in the hope of finding relief from the misfortunes that have befallen them since their encounter with the doll. Becky Vickers is one of these individuals, a name among many, yet one with a story that stands out. A skeptic turned believer, Becky's journey with Robert's curse is a compelling narrative of transformation. "I never really believed in curses, but I do now. 100% I do now," she admits, a statement that echoes the sentiments of countless others who have crossed paths with Robert. Her experience culminated in a letter written to Robert himself.
"So many things have happened since I visited you, Robert, and it can't just be a case of bad luck. I know it's you. Ever since I returned home, nothing but one bad thing after another has happened to me, and I'm afraid of what you will do next. I must apologize for not believing that you could curse someone if they touched you or took pictures of you without your permission first. I am so, so sorry. I will never doubt the kind of power and infliction of fear you can curse someone with. I am a believer. I am. I knew all the rules. I knew that you weren't supposed to take Robert's photograph without asking permission, and I knew you weren't supposed to touch the glass. But I think the curiosity side of me got the better of me. I did touch the glass and I did take some photos without asking. I don't know, you just don't think things are really going to happen. But they do. We started having truly unexplained things happening in our home. I could feel a presence. I could feel the energy of someone else in the house with me. I've never had any feelings in my home, spirits or shadow people. But something was with me. Something dark. It was something there to hurt me. The very first thing that went through my mind was, Am I seeing Jean Otto? Am I seeing Jean that used to own the doll?
Cindy Kaza, a renowned psychic medium and personal hero of mine, once came to the house of the Ottos, where the family was living when Robert came across their threshold. She immediately sensed the air laden with the scent of cigarette smoke in Eugene Otto's art studio. In her journey through the house, Cindy encountered the spirit of a woman and a little girl, each bound to the location by a tapestry of emotions, grief, anger, and an unresolved narrative that begged to be heard. As she searched more, a story began to unfold in her mind, one that hints at forbidden love, a clandestine affair that crossed the boundaries of societal norms. It should be noted that as I record this, weird sounds are coming from all of my technology, sounds that I cannot identify. Emmeline, the family's nanny, might have been involved in a romantic entanglement with Thomas Otto. The possibility that this affair resulted in the birth of a child, a little girl whose life was cut tragically short, casts a shadow over the house and its inhabitants. Cindy hears the term, "not my Bobby, not my Bobby," possibly misinterpreted by those unfamiliar with Bahamian accents, suggesting that the grief-stricken lament of, "they took my Bobby from me," could indeed be a mother's cry for baby. They took my Bobby away from me. This insight brings us closer to understanding the complex web of relationships and emotions that enshroud the Otto house. Cindy senses a voodoo curse might have been placed on Robert, either as an act of vengeance or a protective measure for the child's spirit. Cindy posits that the doll may not house an individual spirit within it, but rather serves as a magnet, attracting the energies and essences of those who've left their mark on the house. Reflecting on Cindy's investigation, which I highly recommend, in the Shock Docs documentary, The Curse of Robert the Doll, I find myself pondering the intersection of love, loss, and the lengths to which we go to preserve or avenge those we care for. The notion that the Otto house serves as a portal, a beacon for spirits drawn to Robert's presence, challenges us to reconsider our understanding of the physical and spiritual worlds. I'm struck by the layers of history and emotion that Robert the Doll embodies. It's not just the tale of a haunted doll, but a narrative steeped in human experience that transcends the bounds of the physical world.
My name is Rachel. After visiting Robert, it has completely shaken my life. Knowing the things that have happened to me and the things that have happened here, Robert is a force to be reckoned with. 4 years ago, we were in Key West on our honeymoon. We had just gotten married a few days prior. We decided to try one of the ghost tours that they had at the fort. After that night, it completely changed the direction of my life. They told everyone that was on the tour that we had to show respect for Robert, to ask for his permission. Everything that you do has to be out of respect. And everyone took it seriously except for my husband. And the moment my husband disrespected Robert was the moment everything went downhill. Weeks after, we started noticing little things happening in our house. The taps started as little tiny knocks just on the wall or on the floors. And as the weeks passed and days passed, we could hear the taps getting closer. It went from one end to the entryway to the hallway. And then once it reached the hallway, the taps turned into more of a footstep. The final breaking point was one night when I got off of work. When I walked into the house, every cabinet in our kitchen was open and everything out of the cabinet was stacked on the floor. Talking about it now, it honestly makes me want to cry because it was the scariest moment that I have ever had in my life. It makes me wonder what happened to make Robert what he is today.
Children grow up. It's an inevitable journey from innocence to experience, marked by milestones both bitter and sweet. For Jean Otto and Robert, his childhood companion, this transition was poignant. They shared an unbreakable bond, a friendship that transcended the usual playtime alliances between a boy and his doll. Robert wasn't just a toy to Jean. He was a confidant, a silent witness to the dreams and fears of childhood. But time, the relentless march forward, brought change. As Gene stood on the brink of adulthood, the world called to him with promises of adventure and discovery. The chest in the attic became Robert's new domain, a place of darkness and solitude, far removed from the sunlit rooms where he and Jean had spent countless hours. It was a symbolic act, packing away childhood to embrace the future, yet it carried the weight of an unspoken farewell. Jean's path led him to the world of academia, first exploring architecture before yielding to the siren call of art. His journey took him to Paris, the heart of the artistic revolution in the 1920s. It was a time of tumultuous change, where the likes of Hemingway and a host of other artists and writers congregated, each chasing their own muse amidst the cafes and galleries of the city. In Paris, Jean immersed himself in the vibrant cultural scene, studying under renowned artists, his soul alight with passion and inspiration. Yet beneath the excitement of this new life, there lingered a shadow, a thread of connection to the past, to a childhood friend left behind in the shadows of an attic. Jean meets Anne Parker, a brilliant pianist whose talent is matched only by her devotion to Jean. Anne, hailing from a background of privilege, finds herself utterly captivated by Jean's artistic spirit and vision. Their love, ripe with the promise of partnership and shared dreams, culminates in marriage on a spring day in 1930, sealing their bond amidst the backdrop of Parisian elegance. With Anne by his side, Jean embarks on the journey to realize his aspirations, to mold his passion into a career that reflects the artist he envisions himself to be. The couple, united in their creative pursuits, soon find themselves navigating the bustly streets of New York, a city that promises endless opportunities, but also presents unforeseen challenges. The Great Depression, a shadow over the decade, erodes the Otto family fortune, placing unforeseen pressures on Jean and Anne. As the 1930s give way to the 1940s, the dynamics within the Otto household undergo a significant shift. Anne emerges as the family's financial anchor, her musical career blossoming against the odds. Her talent and hard work catapult her onto the stage of the legendary Rainbow Room, a venue synonymous with success and recognition in the artistic community. In 1945, Jean Otto found himself adrift in the tumultuous sea of artistic endeavor, his dreams of success as an artist clashing against the harsh rocks of reality. Meanwhile, Anne, his wife, soared on the wings of her burgeoning musical career, her talent recognized and celebrated, a stark contrast to Jean's struggles. Their lives were abruptly changed, unraveled by a phone call that cut through the noise of New York streets, a call from Key West, delivering news of Jean's mother, Minnie, whose health was fading fast. The couple made their way to the Otto home, arriving in time to be there when Minnie passed away on September 14th, 1945. The house was bequeathed to the Otto children, ultimately finding its way into Jean and Anne's care. The decision was heavy yet clear. They would return to Jean's childhood home, to the heart of Key West, to begin anew. Anne, well-versed in her husband's eccentricities, his artist's heart that beat to the rhythm of a different drum, braced herself for the challenges of this new chapter. Yet nothing could have prepared her for the reality of their life back in Key West. Upon their return to Key West and settling into the Otto family home, Anne stumbled upon an old doll tucked away in a storage closet. This discovery would mark the beginning of an unsettling chapter in their lives. Jean's reaction to seeing the doll was not just of recognition, but of deep personal connection. He regarded the doll, Robert, not as an inanimate object, but as an old friend, a companion from his childhood days with whom he shared an unbreakable bond. Jean's interaction with Robert was peculiar, treating him as if he were still the living playmate of his youth. This behavior was alarming to Anne, who found herself questioning the nature of the relationship between her husband and this doll. The sight of a grown man conversing with a doll, attributing life and emotions to it, was unsettling to her, to say the least. It was a side of Jean she had not seen before, one that filled her with a sense of dread and confusion. The situation escalated as Jean began to rekindle his relationship with Robert, spending hours talking to him, reminiscing about old times, and even making plans for the future. To Jean, Robert was a keeper of his memories, a link to his past, and a presence that, in his mind, required care and attention. For Anne, the dynamics within their home began to shift in ways she couldn't have anticipated. Witnessing her husband's deep emotional attachment to Robert, she felt sidelined, an outsider in her own home. Jean's reassurances to Robert that they could, quote, handle Anne, only added to her sense of isolation and concern. This period in their lives was marked by a growing sense of unease, with the doll's presence in the house casting a long shadow over their marriage.
Dear Robert, I was a recent visitor to the museum, and our guide led us to the room where you're located. He told us about the rules to follow. I told you my name, asked permission to take a photo, and thanked you. I thought I followed the rules. But last night as I slept, Robert, you came to me in a nightmare. I decided you might have done this to me, Robert, so I looked at the rules on the internet. Everything I read made me believe I followed your rules. And then I noticed another tab, a tab I never opened, and when I clicked on it, I saw a rule I didn't see before. I didn't know I was supposed to say goodbye. I didn't know that was a rule, Robert. Nobody told me. Forgive me.
Jean's attachment to Robert wasn't just a personal quirk. It became a defining feature of their home. Placing Robert in the window of the turret, Jean unwittingly turned the doll into a spectral sentinel overlooking the streets of Key West. Passers-by, particularly school children, could feel the weight of Robert's gaze, compelling them to cross the street to avoid the unsettling feeling of being watched. The doll's presence was so pronounced, it felt as if he moved on his own, bearing witness to the world outside from his perch, while Jean remained absorbed in his art elsewhere in the house. This phenomenon, where a doll seemingly possessed the power to influence the behavior of the community around it, speaks volumes about the aura of mystery and unease that Robert exuded. The Otto House, once just another family home, morphed into a place of intrigue and fear, a building marked by tales of a cursed doll that watched over Key West from his windowed throne. For Anne, this reality must have felt worlds away from the stages of New York. The limelight had faded, replaced by the shadow of a doll that commanded attention and fear, turning their home into a focal point of local lore and superstition. Reaching her breaking point, Anne decided that Robert the doll's presence in their lives had to end. The couple had previously agreed to banish Robert to the attic, hoping to restore some semblance of normalcy to their home. However, this attempt at peace proved futile, as the very next day brought a chilling reminder that Robert's influence was not so easily contained. Jean awoke to find Anne's side of the bed empty, an unusual occurrence that immediately filled him with concern. His search through the house led him to a startling discovery. Anne, distressed and visibly shaken, accused Jean of locking her all night in a closet, an accusation that bewildered him. Despite her protests and fear, Jean insisted he wasn't responsible, suggesting that the blame lay with Robert, the doll they had tried so hard to isolate. To the outside world, Anne and Jean Otto presented the image of matrimonial bliss, a couple well-matched and content in their picturesque Key West home. Yet the facade of happiness belied the true turmoil that brewed within the walls. a storm centered around an unlikely catalyst, Robert the doll. The presence of Robert, far from being a benign relic of Jean's childhood, became a wedge driving between the couple, straining their relationship to its breaking points. The bond Jean maintained with Robert was not just a quirk, but a profound obsession that Anne found increasingly difficult to understand or accept. It was this peculiar attachment that contributed significantly to the tension in their marriage, leading Anne to take a drastic step for the sake of her own peace. She moved into her own room, physically distancing herself within their shared house. This act of separation within their household was symbolic of the deep rift that had developed between them, a rift exacerbated by the eerie influence Robert seemed to wield. As the doll's presence continued to permeate every aspect of their lives, the couple found themselves caught in a struggle not just with each other, but with the legacy and mystery that Robert represented. In the latter years of Jean Otto's life, the narrative of his and Anne's existence took a melancholic turn. The onset of Parkinson's disease around 1965 marked the beginning of a decade-long battle for Jean, during which he retreated to the turret of their Key West home, a space he shared with Robert the doll. This period was characterized by a gradual decline in Jean's health and mental well-being, a heartbreaking spectacle for those who knew him. Jean's passing on June 24, 1974, left Anne in a solitary struggle with grief and the looming presence of Robert. The house, once a shared domain, now felt oppressive, charged with memories and the silent watch of the doll. Faced with financial difficulties, Anne made the difficult decision to sell their home to William Gazer, a neighbor, ensuring that Robert remained a fixture of the residence. This act was less about honoring Jean's memory and more about distancing herself from the doll that had cast such a long shadow over their lives. Anne's subsequent death from pancreatic cancer 5 years later closed a chapter filled with love, loss, and the legacy of the doll. In the end, the only constant in this saga of human emotion and supernatural intrigue was Robert himself, undisturbed and enduring. In 1976, a new chapter in the saga of Robert the Doll began when Myrtle Reuter and Bill Reuter acquired the Otto family home from William Gazer. The house, with its rich history and lingering mysteries, welcomed its new occupants, and with them, Robert found himself in the company of new guardians. It's said that initially, there was a sense of fascination, and perhaps even a bond between Robert and the Reuter family, a fleeting period of harmony reminiscent of the early days when Robert first arrived at the Otto home. However, as the pattern of Robert's storied past would predict, this period of tranquility was short-lived. The doll, surrounded by legend and imbued with an aura of the uncanny, soon became the center of unsettling occurrences. A particularly chilling part of the legend recounts a terrifying incident where Robert supposedly attempted to attack the Reuter's daughter, an act that compelled the father to take decisive action by locking Robert away, an attempt to protect his family from further harm. Tragically, and perhaps eerily echoing the doll's tumultuous history with its previous owners, it was not long after this event that the father was found dead from carbon monoxide poisoning. A tragic event that leaves the community and those beyond to ponder. Was this a mere accident, or did the curse of Robert claim another victim? Myrtle Reuter, now a widow, finds herself at a crossroads 2 years later. Economic pressures and the heavy weight of her experiences compel her to sell the house. Yet in a move that speaks volumes of her complex relationship with the doll, Myrtle chooses to keep him, even as she steps away from the home that housed their shared history. The legend of Robert and Myrtle did not fade with time. Instead, it continued to grow, fueled by incidents that seemed to underscore the doll's unsettling presence. It reached a tipping point on the morning after Myrtle was reportedly attacked, an event so harrowing that it cemented her resolve to remove Robert from her life permanently. Seeking a place for him, she turned to the Fort East Martello Museum, a site steeped in Key West's rich history, and one that Jean Otto, the doll's original owner, had connections to. In a moment of surrender, Myrtle delivered Robert to the museum, imploring them to take him under their care. Her actions that day, marked by urgency and a desire to sever ties with Robert, suggest a deep-seated belief in the doll's haunting legacy. Myrtle's departure from the museum was the last act in a saga that spanned decades, ending with her death 101 days later. Upon Robert's arrival at the Fort East Martello Museum, the director found himself at a crossroads too, unsettled by the stories that trailed behind the doll. In an act of caution, or perhaps unease, he decided to tuck Robert away from the public's gaze, relegating him to the confines of a storage room among the museum's eclectic collection. The museum, already a custodian of Jean Otto's artistic legacy, became an unwitting sanctuary for what many consider to be the world's most haunted doll. This convergence of histories, of the doll and its first owner, seemed almost fated, intertwining their stories within the museum's walls once again. However, Robert's presence seemed to disturb more than just the peace of the museum's staff. Shortly after his arrival, inexplicable events began to unfold, starting with plumbing issues that defied logical explanation. The call to a plumbing specialist to address these troubles led to an encounter that would further cement his reputation. The plumber was confronted by the doll's unsettling aura, hastily abandoning his task and proclaiming that he would never again set foot in the museum had he known of its spectral resident. As whispers of Robert's curse began to permeate the museum, a curious pattern emerged. Employees reported odd occurrences and a palpable sense of being watched, contributing to a growing legend that captivated the imagination of all nearby. Robert's story, once confined to the Otto household, now commanded a much wider audience. Visiting Robert the Doll at the Fort East Martello Museum has become akin to an experience of cautious reverence, much like observing a majestic but potentially dangerous lion at the zoo. A fascination tempered with a healthy dose of respect for the boundaries set to protect us. The narrative surrounding Robert's transition from a personal relic to a public phenomenon encapsulates a journey from obscurity to infamy, a transformation that even Myrtle, his last private owner, could hardly have envisioned. After being put on display, Robert's sphere of influence expanded dramatically, his story captivating not just locals, but people across the nation. This growing curiosity wasn't without its peculiarities. Visitors began reporting unexplained phenomena such as drained batteries and malfunctioning cameras, suggesting that Robert's consent was required to capture his likeness without repercussions. The museum space around Robert seemed to pulsate with an unseen energy. Objects began moving without apparent cause, and Robert himself seemed to change positions, fueling the lore that he was more than just a doll. Whispers of names, dirty footprints on the floor around his case, and a general unease contributed to the legend, painting Robert not merely as a haunted object, but as an entity with a will of its own. The legend posits a cautionary tale. To interact with Robert like we are today, without acknowledging his presence or seeking his permission, invites unknown consequences. Imagine entering the museum at the start of the day, the air still and quiet, save for the hushed whispers of early visitors. The staff, accustomed to the oddities associated with Robert, perform their routine checks around his display case. What meets their eyes is not just a doll seated behind glass, but evidence of something else. Footprints, small and distinct, leading up to the case. These aren't the marks of a child's prank or a careless visitor. They're perfectly formed, as if Robert himself had taken a midnight stroll through the museum's halls. These footprints, appearing out of nowhere, suggest a level of autonomy and presence that defies logical explanation. It raises questions. If Robert is indeed just a doll, how do we account for these physical traces of movement? Are we to believe that an inanimate object can, in the stillness of the night, become animate? The implications are fascinating and terrifying. It challenges our understanding of the boundary between the animate and inanimate, urging us to consider the possibility that objects, especially those charged with strong emotional energies and histories, might harbor spirits or consciousnesses of their own.
Key West had always been my escape, a 4-hour drive to a place where the worries of the world seemed to melt away. I frequented it often, but there's one visit that changed everything, one that I've struggled to come to terms with. I remember the day clearly, the way the air felt, the sounds of the city. Then we visited the museum, home to Robert the Doll. I'd heard the stories, of course. They said he was haunted, that there was something within him. But I laughed it off. How could a doll, a child's plaything, hold any real power? In a moment of arrogance, I mocked him, took photos without asking, blatantly ignoring the warnings. I thought I was above the superstitions, that it was all just for tourists. But the consequences were immediate and devastating. It started small, with car troubles and minor inconveniences, but it quickly escalated. Accidents involving my family, the sudden and unexplainable death of my dog, my mother's sudden illness followed by her passing, job losses, contracts falling through, and a personal health crisis that nearly ended my life. Each event felt like a domino, falling into the next, a relentless cascade of misfortune that seemed to have no end. It was a wake-up call, a realization that some forces shouldn't be trifled with. In desperation, I wrote to Robert a letter of apology, hoping to break the cycle of bad luck that seemed determined to destroy me. And then, as suddenly as it began, it stopped. I can't explain it, and part of me still wrestles with accepting it. But I know what I experienced, the toll it took on me and those I love. Sharing this isn't easy. It feels like admitting to a weakness, a foolishness that I can't take back. But it's also a warning. I was wrong to mock, to disregard the stories and letters that surround him all over the walls. And I paid a price for that arrogance, a price I wouldn't wish on anyone.
In this journey of exploring Robert the Doll's legacy, I've come to a poignant realization. It's not about whether I, or anyone for that matter, believe in the supernatural aspects tied to Robert. The truth lies in the experiences of countless individuals who've crossed paths with him, those who, to this day, plead for his forgiveness, convinced they're cursed. The notion of a curse, of an inanimate object wielding such power and influence over the living, might seem far-fetched to some. It's just superstition, they'll say. Haunted dolls belong in movies, not in real life. But to dismiss these stories outright is to ignore a profound collective experience. I've read letter after letter, each a personal account of misfortune attributed to a lack of respect shown to Robert. They're reflections of genuine fear, regret, and oftentimes, sincere desperation. It's a somber reminder of the power of belief and the lengths to which people will go to reconcile with forces they don't understand. Growing up, we're often told, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. This adage takes on deeper significance when it comes to Robert. It's not just about politeness. It's a rule of self-preservation, according to those who felt his wrath. Speaking ill in his presence or even harboring negative thoughts is believed to invite misfortune. It's become clear to me through the countless stories and personal accounts I've encountered that what we're dealing with isn't just a doll. It's a nexus of energies, a focal point where countless spirits and stories converge. Closing the portal that Robert seems to represent is a task that seems beyond our current understanding or capability. It's not merely about the physical object itself, but about acknowledging the multitude of spirits intertwined with his existence. This acknowledgement isn't just an act of respect, it's a necessity. A way to live alongside the forces that Robert embodies without inviting their wrath upon ourselves. To think that an object could become a significant repository for spiritual energy is both fascinating and daunting. The idea of reversing such spellwork seems, at this point, not just challenging, but perhaps unwise. The focus, then, shifts to coexistence, to a respectful acknowledgement of the energies at play. And it's not about fear, though the consequences of disrespect can be severe, as many have learned. It's about understanding the place of legends in our lives, about recognizing that some things are beyond our control and comprehension. To those affected by Robert's curse, the path to peace isn't through denial or confrontation, but through apology and respect, acknowledging their part in the story and seeking reconciliation with the spirits that they've wronged. Believing in or even respecting the spirit attached to Robert isn't about superstition either. It's about acknowledging a reality that, though unseen, has tangible effects on the lives of those who've come into contact with him. A legend, after all, is not just a story from the past, but a living entity fed by belief, fear, and respect. It grows with each telling, gaining strength and presence in our world. I can't help but wonder about the future. What new stories will be added to his legend? How will our understanding of his presence evolve? One thing is clear. The legend of Robert the Doll, like all legends, is far bigger than his physical manifestation. When you hear the claim of the world's most haunted doll, it sets an expectation, doesn't it? It's a title that Robert the Doll doesn't just inhabit, he embodies it, through the experiences of those who encounter him day in and day out throughout the year. The heart of Robert's legend pulses with questions of possession, of a spirit trapped within cloth and straw. There's a story, whispered in the corners of Key West, of a child born from a hidden love between Thomas and Emmeline, whose life was cut tragically short. Could the sorrow of such a loss, the weight of hidden truths, be the source of the energy that animates Robert? Is this child's spirit the one reaching out, yearning for recognition or release? I can't help but reflect on the power of our collective beliefs and fears. It's as if our attention, whether rooted in belief or skepticism, has woven the fabric of Robert's existence. We fed the legend with our fears, our curiosities, our energy, shaping him into the entity he is today. It's a startling realization. We create these legends, these monsters, imbuing them with power and then stand back as they take on a life of their own, beyond our control. So what's next then? As Robert's legend continues to grow, fueled by each new encounter and each shared story, where does it lead us? Why do these stories matter to us? Again, as always, they serve as mirrors, reflecting the complexities of the human psyche, our fears, our hopes, and our endless fascination with the unknown, reminding us that, in every tale of the paranormal, there lies a deeper quest for meaning, for connection, for a glimpse beyond the veil of our mundane reality. In the context of When Walls Can Talk, where paranormal mysteries and dark histories collide, Robert's tale is a reminder of the power of narrative to bridge these worlds, to connect the dots between the seen and unseen. It challenges us to consider how these stories, these legends that we keep alive through telling and retelling, shape our understanding of the world and our place in it. I'm reminded of a quote by Neil Gaiman. Stories are a way to preserve oneself, to be remembered, and to forget. This is the essence of why we're drawn to tales like Robert's. They're not just about preserving the past. They are about exploring the depths of our collective memory and confronting the mysteries that lurk within. So what can we take from stories like Robert's? Perhaps it's the understanding that the line between the real and unreal is not as clear as we might think. Or maybe it's the realization that our fears and our beliefs have the power to manifest in ways we can scarcely imagine. I leave you with this thought. In our quest for knowledge, in our search for answers, can we cherish the mysteries that remind us of the boundless possibilities of the universe and the human spirit? Can we remain always asking questions, exploring the unknown, and most importantly, listening to the walls that speak? Robert, I now speak directly to you. Through whispers and shadows, we've tread your tale. With respect, we've uttered your name, delved into your depths, and now heed our parting words. Goodbye, Robert. We sever the tie, a spell cast, a poem penned, a prayer whispered into the void. With this word, we shield those who listened, those who shared, and those who dared to glance into your realm. Your story, once entwined with ours, is now a tale concluded. May our paths diverge, leaving only echoes in the silence of your watch. Hello, everybody. It's Jeremy, your host, researcher, editor, and producer here at When Walls Can Talk, the podcast. Just wanting to say once again, thank you so much for being here. If you enjoyed this episode, learned something new, or had some new thought bubble into your mind where it comes to the paranormal and supernatural, please either share this podcast with a friend or take a moment and rate and review our show wherever you listen, particularly on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, just to help us continue to grow and reach new audiences. I've been tracking our numbers lately, and we're just growing so quickly and so fast, and it's an honor to be a part of that journey with you. Now, I've never shouted this out, I don't think, on this podcast, but I want to take the moment to do so. If you are a fan of paranormal investigation, particularly if you're also a fan of drag artists and the queer community, I just want to make sure that you all know that I am our resident psychic medium on a little YouTube series that is taking off as well called Ghost Hunty TV. We just wrapped up our entire first season, so you can go check out drag artists such as myself investigating paranormal locations all over the state of Colorado. We are actively in the process of preparing for season 2, which will take us out of the state of Colorado and down into Texas later this summer. So if you're a fan of paranormal investigation and just can't get enough of the content that I'm a part of, which I just can't thank you enough for, definitely, definitely go subscribe to Ghost Hunty TV. Yeah, don't forget to join at When Walls Can Talk with underscores for spaces on Instagram. In my bio, you'll see a link to join the Talking Walls Club, which is our broadcast channel, where I will be sharing prompts to share some of your stories, teasers of upcoming episodes. That's also where I'm going to start having polls for our listeners to vote on which topics they would like to see on the podcast next. So if you would like to play a part in choosing what we cover on this podcast in the future for no money whatsoever, definitely go check out the broadcast channel and join us. It's basically just like a giant group chat with all of my listeners and followers. So check that out. And yeah, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to go ahead and hop off so I can start recording our next episode. So much coming down the pike. Cinematic Secrets will be returning with an episode on Mommy Dearest in the very near future. And can't wait to catch you next time. Take good care of yourselves. And you'll probably have some tarot content coming as well for those of you who've listened all the way to the end. Thank you.